I found that there's a theme of a lot of people who like love animals, but they don't know how to channel that.
Welcome to The Deal with Animals. I'm Marika Bell, anthrozoologist, CPDT certified dog trainer, and an animal myself. This is a podcast about the connection and interaction between humans and other animals.
I love this question. What's the deal with animals?
What do I think is the deal with animals? I think the deal with animals, I think is all, they're awesome.
So what do you think is the deal with animals?
For the first time ever, we have two guests today. We'll be talking to Carol Klein and Nora Livingston about a little project they work on together called Fanimal. The mission of Fanimal is to help young people discover the diverse intersectional range of animal careers. We discussed both Carol and Nora's surprising career trajectories that led them towards the Fanimal project. And we delve into Fanimal's various programs, including Junior Fanimal, their Animal Chat Time series, and the internships and fellowship programs they have set up for high school, college, and graduate students. I originally met Carol and Nora during the inaugural Animals and Tourism Conference held over Zoom in 2021. Since then, I've followed the Fanimal project with great interest, so I'm very pleased today to be able to share this organization with you. So let's get to it. Thank you for joining me today as we ask the question, what's the deal with animals? Welcome to The Deal with Animals. Would you please introduce yourselves and share your pronouns?
My name is Carol Klein, and my pronouns are she and her.
Thank you.
My name is Nora Livingstone, and my pronouns are she, her.
Thank you very much. Now, Carol, why don't you just start with giving us an overview of Fanimal?
Sure. Thank you. I'd love to. Fanimal is a nonprofit. We have been around for 4 years. So we are a fledgling nonprofit. We exist to provide mentorship and networking programs for people who want to have careers that help animals. And that could be in animal advocacy, you know, that realm. It could be in any sort of environmental studies, environmental science, environmental policy, environmental law. It could be in vegan education. So that's what we do. And it really came out of a midlife crisis on my end, realizing that my 50th birthday was coming at me. And I hadn't really done as much as I would have liked to focus on my true love, my true passion, which is animals. So with the help of many, many people and learning as we go, I'm real excited to go into our fifth year of programming, and that is a excellent segue to why Nora Livingstone is here.
Yeah, Nora, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what you why you came to Fanimal, how you got there, and what you do?
Yeah. Well, I love talking about myself, so I will take it away. So I started an animal tourism B Corp about 10 years ago, Animal Experience International. We help people travel and volunteer on animal conservation programs. Now, a few years ago, a pandemic happened, so we did not help anyone travel anywhere. And I knew about Fanimal. I knew about Carol. And we were talking at the very start of the pandemic saying, wow, this is going to be a terrible 6 weeks. We should work together. What kind of things can we do? And, you know, to fill the time that I have and also to sort of see what else I can do. I've been doing this for 10 years. And then I never knew what I wanted to do. I've always loved animals. I always thought that they were so interesting, so curious. And I came to this working with animals in sort of like a roundabout way. And so I just loved the idea of working with Fanimal and getting other people that, you know, didn't really know what they wanted to do, how they would work with animals, how they would relate to them. And so we decided that one of the programs I would do would be hosting animal chat time, in which once a week I sit down on Zoom, of course, and I talk to kids about a specific animal. And at first it was like, this would be kind of fun. And now we've been doing it for a bunch of seasons. And it's been so fun to just sit with kids and just talk about weird facts about animals and everything in between. So it's been a total departure, but it's been so cool to be part of that for Fanimal.
Animal chat time was really born from the pandemic, because Nora and I were, you know, realizing that all of a sudden these kids were at home and parents had to provide activities. Remember back then, that sort of crisis that we were all going, what do we do? We're working, we have kids. And Nora, because of her extensive travel experience and her love of animals, she knows so many cool things about all these different animals. And so we thought, you know, and you can already tell she has a wonderful personality. She loves working with kids, and she's really able to connect with them on an individual basis, even though Animal Chat Time is a Zoom program and there's these multiple windows of kids doing different things as they're listening to her talk about animals. So we're really proud to have Animal Chat Time as one of our programs that is continuing and growing. We'll talk about the next season coming up. Maybe we'll let our host pick an animal to be featured. Nora, what do you think?
I love that idea. Yes.
Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah. It's one of our programs. We strive to have programs that meet individuals at any age, and Animal Chat Time is our lowest age. What is the range of age, Nora? I always forget that.
Well, it's the lowest, it starts lowest, but then we have people from sometimes every single decade. We've had 4-year-olds that come, and it's so great because you see them on the little screen and they're drawing or making little Lego of the animal we're talking about. They show their stuffies. They're just doing all these creative things while I tell them all of these facts about animals, which is so neat. And so, yeah, 4-year-olds, we have a number of elementary school kids. We have some high school kids that pop in and out. And my friends have come, and we've had people from, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So I think one of the really cool things was it started as, let's talk to kids about animals because we'll really indoctrinate them young and be like, seriously, it's not just a frog. It's a bullfrog. Here's a cool thing about it. But then people come on and go, okay, I love sloths. I just want to learn more about sloths. Or someone goes, I've never heard of a Bincheron before. I just wanted to know what it was so I can tell my friends. And so it's been really cool that way to, from the pandemic, there doesn't need to be silver linings, but a massive silver lining was able to really experience joy and curiosity with the kids and people and everyone to sit down and say, did you know this weird fact? Because I did not.
But that's, you know, I think part of loving animals and learning those facts is, and then sharing them is almost more fun than knowing them yourself, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Seeing the joy in people's faces and being like, I just need to tell you how fast this flying snake goes, because if I just keep this in my head, I will explode. Like, other people need to also go, whoa. And I can go, yeah, right?
Okay. Can I just tell you, I was watching a program on sloths probably, I don't know, 3 years ago now. It came up in my Facebook feed where I had posted, because I was so excited to learn that sloths could swim. I was like, go sloth. They were showing him swim in the water. I mean, they were building up to showing the sloth swimming in the water. I'm like, yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. He's going to swim. And then he starts going and he's just so slow. swimming. It was the best thing I've ever seen. I was literally cheering for this sloth, watching this documentary on sloths by myself in my living room. And then I had to share.
It's somehow not the same as watching me swim slowly. It's not as much fun.
It's not as graceful.
So I have to also say, Carol, your comment about a midlife crisis, it hit me because I've had like three of those now, I feel like, in my life, and I'm only 42. So I know there's going to be more, but yes, you know, sometimes midlife crises are so good to just shake things up a little bit and get you doing what you really are supposed to be doing at that time.
I've heard that it takes 5 years or a certain amount of days to become an expert on something, or to reinvent yourself. And I'm certainly not an expert on animals, but I have enjoyed the process of learning all that I have, not just about animals. I know that's surprising. That's the number one thing, but about providing programming. I'm an educator during the day, but that's college students. That's not necessarily our audience all the time at Fanimal. Learning about managing a nonprofit and the flexing some entrepreneurial muscles there. But the best thing is learning about all of the different people who are also attracted to learning about and being interested in animals and wanting to have a positive impact on the animal world. And that's the biggest joy. I'm saying all that because through the midlife crisis, it takes some time to do a big pivot. But through that, Nora and I talk a lot now, and we've got such an incredible team at Fanimal. I can't say enough wonderful things about all the clever and brilliant people who work at Fanimal, and they all do it part time as a gig. So they don't do it to make money. They do it to further the mission.
Yeah, yeah. So, question also about your background. You mentioned a little bit your education background and teaching college students. So I want to talk a bit about that. And I also want to talk to you, Nora, about what you're doing right now and how you got into that. So, Carol, do you want to start?
Sure. I'm not going to give away the commonality that Nora and I have, but we also have a commonality in our non-Fanimal life. I am a professor of tourism, and I get varying reactions when I say that. But basically, I studied tourism planning and policy. And so there's good ways and bad ways to do tourism. And we try to impress upon our students all of the planning and development activities and management activities that can be done so that tourism can be the best that it can be for communities. All of the members of the community, which includes non-human animals.
Yeah, that is so important because I mean, one of my most popular episodes on here is our ecotourism episode. And people just really seem to gravitate towards that because people want to do tourism right. You know, they want to make sure that when they have a tourism experience, it isn't something they feel bad about later, I think. At least that's how I feel about it. And that they are helping when they're being a tourist and they're not just doing it for the sake of seeing things and promoting themselves.
Yeah, it can be a very consumptive activity. And absolutely, I think, many people want to approach it from a different way.
So Nora, tell us about what you do and again, what your background is. What's your connection here?
Yeah. So my background is, like I said before, I've always loved animals. I grew up in a military family, so I've always fell into travel and then enjoyed it after being made to move around a lot. But I I never knew how I was able to, how I would be able to work with animals. Because I was never really good at math. I didn't want to do biologies. I wasn't particularly artsy. And so, I just kind of like, did a bunch of weird things in school. I did environmental policy as well as cultural anthropology. And then I became a guide of mountaineering and canoeing. It's like the weirdest way I've ever said that out loud, but sure. And then I was able to travel a bunch and volunteer with dogs and elephants and wildlife in a few different countries. And I came back to Canada and I was a volunteer coordinator at a wildlife center up here. And I met my now business partner and she sort of pitched this idea. Just Marika, what you were saying, that like people want to be authentically beneficial when they travel. They want kind of hands-on experiences with animals, but they want to do things that don't make them feel bad later. They don't want to go like, oh, I loved swimming with that dolphin. And then 5 years later go, oh God, I did not like swimming with that dolphin. And so we came together and we were like, well, how do we get people to volunteer, pardon me, volunteer with animals? And my famous last words that I make every single time I talk about AEI was I said, a business, how hard could that be? So 10 years later, super hard, but we have a whole bunch of different programs that it's all volunteering and it's all consent-based tourism, something that we made up in the pandemic, but we really think helps people make good choices because it's consent with yourself, with the animals you're volunteering with, and the community. So it's a full body yes. Everyone wants to actually take part. They're not coerced into taking part. And it just fell really nicely to working with Fanimal. I found out that there was a woman that was starting this group called Fanimal, Fans of Animals. I'm a feminist. I want to support women. I know how hard it is to start businesses and charities and everything. I love animals. And so I was like, I want to get in on this. I want to help this Carol person out, who I sometimes call Kimberly by mistake. and so it was really perfect to go from truly falling into all my careers, like never really knowing what I was going to do. And suddenly it's 10 years down the road and I have a B Corp, an ethical travel company, and I'm a children's educator. Obviously, little baby Nora wouldn't know that that's what I would be doing. But I think all of the steps that I took lead me here. And it all makes sense when you're looking back at it. So that's the long form. You're welcome.
Yeah, no. And I think that brings us to what Fanimal is all about, really, that overview, which was that you're trying to help people get into an animal based career. And people come to that in so many different ways. I mean, you ask somebody how or why they're doing what they're doing, and it is usually very roundabout. There is no like straight trajectory. I was like you, Nora. I think when I was younger, I knew I loved animals, had no idea think about for your future career. And I remember taking the survey in middle school and in high school. So about 12 years old and about 16 years old. And both times it came back with chicken farmer. Apparently, I am supposed to be a chicken farmer. I don't know. So it's okay. You can unmute yourself to laugh because it is very funny.
I wanted to unmute myself and laugh over you.
it's a very specific type of farmer. Like I thought you were going to say farmer, but that's a very specific time.
It is. Yeah. It's a very specific kind of farmer. I'm not quite sure if that's just all they had in their catalog or what. But I knew I didn't want to be a chicken farmer. So I just went the whole biology, zoology route because that had animals associated with it. And then just tried to sort of find opportunities along the way that would get me in a direction that I liked. So again, that was going the science route, even though I never felt I was that great at science. I hated labs. I didn't want to do any dissecting. I didn't want to be a vet. You know, there was all of these things that I knew I didn't want to do, but knowing what you do want to do is so much harder. And having people actually out there mentoring and being able to show people what the possibilities are, I think is really, really important.
Absolutely. And just knowing the diverse and wide field that is animals, right? Like the intersectionality of working with animals, it is and can be even more in every single field. And that's something that we see in Fanimal, looking at our interns, looking at people that work with us. We don't have a bunch of vets and vet techs that are doing things. We have people who studied firefighting and are doing media studies, but love animals. So why not use these passions for Fanimal and for their career later on? I think that is something that's so interesting because, yeah, there's this huge disservice that we're told that your interests must be linear and they must be focused on one thing and it must be insular. It can't be diverse and intersectionality or it focused on intersectionality.
We're all saying similar things. When I was a little girl, I wanted to be a vet. And when I tell people about Fanimal, I'll mention that. And you'll see, you know, head nodding going on. And I think, you know, in addition to farmer and, you know, zookeeper, we hear just two or three park ranger. These are things that we hear as a five-year-old or a seven-year-old of ways that we can engage with animals in our career. But then you find out that in my case, I'm not very medically inclined. I wouldn't do very well in biology courses, or that being a vet is a very, very sad career. I don't mean it's a sad career. It's an amazing, noble career, but it comes with a lot of heavy decisions and sad moments. And then what? And then what? And through the years, even though my students have been focusing on tourism or hospitality or recreation or natural resource management, I found that there's a theme of a lot of people who like love animals, but they don't know how to channel that. So I'm glad now, flash forward, you know, I'm not a little girl anymore. I'm so glad at the diversity of organizations, of businesses. I mean, Nora said that her business has been in business for 10 years. It's a B Corp. It's an award-winning B Corp. Every single year, they win the top awards. And, you know, when I was a little girl, that just wasn't around, that those sort of entrepreneurial opportunities.
Well, thank you you can talk about me all day, Carol. I'll take it. You know, we shared what everyone wanted to be or what they were told they should be in school. I did one of those surveys, Marika, and it told me that I should be a secretary because I went to school in the 1950s. And there's nothing wrong with being a secretary, of course. But I was in high school and I was like, that just seems probably not what I'm going to do. I seem like I want to do like a little bit more, but I mean, so much of entrepreneurship is administrative work. So it was probably kind of right.
You're just a secretary for yourself now.
Yeah.
Let me ask, can you explain B Corp?
Yeah. So B Corp is a certification through a nonprofit called B Labs. And what it is your company has a triple bottom line that you have to show quantifiable benefit to. So a triple bottom line means that you are a company, you have, well, in non-pandemic times, you turn a profit. And then you measure that to be a successful company, but then you also measure your quantifiable benefit to the planet and the people. And so B Corp is really interesting because you get audited at the very start, and then you get audited now every 3 years to show that quantifiable benefit. So we can't say, oh, you volunteer with animals, it must be good. We have to say, you volunteer with animals, this is how many trees we planted in Costa Rica. This is how many animals are released from wildlife rehabilitation. This is the humane welfare that they're receiving. This is how many jobs are by locals in these communities. And so it's such a wonderful certification, because it really is this stamp of, we are in capitalism, we are buying things, but we're buying things that are, you know, helping the planet, helping people, are fair around the world. So Method Cleaner, Patagonia, Ben & Jerry's, especially the vegan side of that, they're all B Corps. And so there's more than 5,000 now. When we started, there was about 400. And it's a really exciting movement, because people are looking around and saying, business can be a force for good. And it can be, just because you're buying something, just like in tourism, just because you're going somewhere, doesn't mean you have to feel bad about it. You can make these really informed choices, and someone has done the work for you.
I could talk to you about this all day. I really think we'll have to do an episode on this. We'll probably have to do a series on animals and tourism, because there really are so many different aspects to talk about. But let's go back to Fanimal for a second. We talked about how parents use Fanimal. Can teachers also use it in the classroom? Is that being done?
Yes, absolutely. We have a program called Junior Fanimal, which is targeting kids like 8 to 14. And it doesn't, as Nora said, Animal Chat Time is for all ages. I love tuning into Animal Chat Time. Nora, I don't know how you feel about this comparison. It's like Disney. It's good for all ages. There's something in it for everyone. But Junior Fanimal has a specific target age, 8 to 14. And there's two versions of Junior Fanimal. One is for classrooms. So I want to get to the heart of your question. And then it's also can be done by individual kids. The essence of Junior Fanimal is to try to encourage kids to have, to do activities that foster a lifelong engagement with animals. And so, for example, there are 7 different categories of activities. There's like a creative one. There is a volunteer one. There's a donation activity. There's a career activity. There's all these different ways that we can engage with animals throughout our lives, even if we don't take on a vocation that directly impacts animals. And so Junior Fanimal is there to reinforce that approach to life, to lead an animal-friendly life. And every time a kid does an activity, they get a badge. So you get an advocacy badge or a physical activity badge. And it really is available to all kids. We are putting it on a new platform, which is going to make it even more accessible to lots of different communities around the world. And as I mentioned, to address your question, we're going to have a classroom or a club setting where it can be done in group settings, but also an individual kid can do it after school.
I was going to say, do you have badges? But yes, of course you have badges.
Of course we have badges. And there's the cutest elephant in the middle of the badge, because elephants are our mascot, our icon.
Primarily, do you see this as an advocacy, as getting children into advocacy? Or is it, you talked about engagement with animals. What does that look like to you? What are you hoping for?
So first and foremost, we really want to We really want to provide opportunities and ways of channeling people's energy. And if that is towards a meaningful career that helps animals, that's what we exist for. But not everybody wants to do that. They might have another career interest in mind. That doesn't mean they need to forget about animals altogether. There's a lot of different other ways that we can keep animals in mind. So when I talk about engagement, it's engaging with the natural world, keeping those, you know, animals in mind, engaging with the natural world in the best way that works for your lifestyle, your values, and you know, where you want to be. We do work with a lot of young people, but that's not to say that some of our programs aren't geared towards adults as well.
So, this is relatively recent that you started Fanimal 2 years ago now?
Four.
Mm-hmm. Four. Okay. 4 years ago now, right? The pandemic's, you know, gone on forever.
Yeah, exactly.
So some of the kids that started with you early on, what have you seen? Have you been in contact with them? Do you know how their early, you know, careers, if they're old enough for that yet, have started to develop?
So yes and no. We've been in contact with some and not with others. I take great pride in the fact that Fanimal is not an organization that is focuses only on North America or only on the U.S. or only on North Carolina, where I happen to be located. We have a very international advisory board, advisory council. We have a very international board of directors. And so some of the folks that have participated in our very early junior Fanimal programs are in, you know, in various countries throughout the world. So we've had, you know, varying luck staying in touch with them, but some we very much do. Nora has quite the following in Animal Chat Time, and her following is also international. So I will ask her to speak to that, please.
Well, I think they're all in the process of growing up. Even the ones that are my age, we're all growing up in different ways. But what I have found has been so cute and so cool is I get messages of people, obviously, that I know. And we get messages through Fanimal that kids have been putting on their own animal chat times and for their friends and their family. And I got to be part of someone's Zoom call when they were Zooming their family about coral reef and different fish in Australia. And it was so neat to see these kids be creative, these kids continue to be curious and wanting to, like we talked about earlier, Marika, share the excitement when you learn a fact about an animal and go, whoa, this is super neat. And so, you know, in just a couple seasons of Animal Chat Time, people have been really like sharing curiosity and sharing the ability to be educators, even though like none of us, well, okay, Carol, but me and the other Animal Chat Timers aren't educators. And knowing that gets to be everyone. If you love an animal, if you love a fact about an animal and you tell people, then you're educating them and you're an advocate and you're now an activist and all of these things. And so it's pretty neat to see that just the inspiration that everyone is getting from Fanimal.
So we try to have a lot of interconnection between our programs. We have a successful college internship program, which we also started during the pandemic, because college kids have an internship requirement in a lot of different disciplines and programs. Well, all of a sudden they couldn't do it. And so we offered a remote internship. And that first summer, we ended up having 16 interns, which is quite a lot for a wee organization in its second year. But now, you know, our internship program is more developed. We have had a fellowship program, but our interns, in addition to working on their own professional development and their own like research skills, communication skills, interviewing skills, graphic design skills. They work with different Fanimal programs. And so if they're interested in environmental education, they may work on the junior Fanimal program. We have had interns work with Nora in animal chat time. So maybe they'll do some research or they'll help find some pictures in the public domain. But one recent intern really loved animal chat time, Dana, and she ended up being the tech host of animal chat time for one or two seasons. And so you asked about our kids, Verica, but I love also our interns, our college interns who then go on to serve other roles at Fanimal, like being on the advisory council, being on the board of directors, or being a contractor themselves. Like two of our recent interns, Gina and Allison, after their internship, rolled right into a contractor position and pretty much managed our online auction.
Oh, that's great. There's so many possibilities. It's, you know, dog barking in the background. It's just par for the course for this podcast. Really, it happens all the time. You're just lucky we haven't had a 2-year-old run in here yet to find out what I'm doing. So, what about high school students? We've kind of covered that early to 13 and college. What's going on with Fanimal for high school students?
I am glad you asked. If I had fed that question to you, it couldn't have been more perfect. So thank you for asking that. We have a fellowship program for college students and graduate students. And so we have this missing segment for high school students. Well, we actually had a high school intern develop a high school fellowship program. Now, we haven't launched that fellowship program because it's during a summertime. We know that in high school, kids want to get work experience, they're doing traveling, and they don't have a whole lot of time to devote to a volunteer fellowship program. But in summer of 23, we hope to be piloting our high school fellowship program, which is really a 2-week program. It's about 40 hours of work total, and the high school students will do 10 hours and 10 hours of face-to-face over Zoom, and then the additional 20 hours independently. And they'll be awarded a Fanimal Fellowship Certificate of Completion, and we're very excited about launching that. If any of your listeners are interested in participating in our pilot program, I would love for them to contact me.
Yeah, that does sound really interesting. I would have loved to do that in high school. That would have been great.
I think your 5.5-year-old should come to season 5 of Animal Chat Time.
Absolutely, she should. Yeah, she'd really like it. In fact, I'll have to ask her what animal she thinks she would like to learn about. But I mean, one of my favorites is the Yeti crab. Like, I don't know anything about the Yeti crab, but my girls are huge fans of Octonauts, which is an excellent, cartoon for kids who like animals and that sort of thing. And for me too, I will sit there and learn about things like a Yeti crab, which is featured in one of their episodes. And I still don't know enough about because it sounds great. It's a hairy crab.
I just saw Nora write down something. I think it was Yeti crab. Yep.
Have you guys heard about this crab?
Mm-mm.
No. So there you go.
This is the best thing about Animal Chat Time, because the first two seasons, the first bunch of seasons, we like outsourced and we asked what people wanted to learn about. And I was like, what on earth animal is that? Oh, it's that animal. And so it's been so interesting. Or something like narwhals was our first one. And I was like, oh, I know what narwhals are, pretty cool. And then learning about it, I was like, are you joking? I don't know anything about narwhals. That's so cool. And so it's so neat when people are like, Yeti crab, tell me more. I'm like, okay, I'll tell you. I'll tell you so much.
Nora and I were on a trip together, one of the animal experiences, international trips, this summer to Guatemala. And we saw leafcutter ants. And leafcutter ants are so cool. And we're like, we have to feature leafcutter ants in season 5. So I'm advocating for jellyfish. So we'll see how much sway I have on that.
There are some cool jellyfish, very cool jellyfish. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many cool animals. And, you know, when you ask people what their favorite animal is, it's almost always, you know, something big and charismatic, like a panda or a, right. you know, my personal favorite, a lion or elephants, you know, and, but there's just some of those smaller, less, you know, I'm going to use quotes, charismatic animals can be pretty darn charismatic. Yes. Pangolins. Carol's holding up a picture of a pangolin. Yeah. They've become charismatic, haven't they? Pangolins have now had so much publicity. I feel like that people, you know, they're soft, plushy pangolin toys now. You don't see flying snake toys yet.
No, not yet. But I think if anyone can make that happen, Nora can make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I went into learning about flying snakes going, okay, this is a thing of nightmares. This is a snake that flies. Okay. I guess we will just go into it. And then after, you know, like the whole reason, well, I will say the whole reason that I fear things is I don't know enough about them. And I don't know how cuddly and cute and so cool they are. Like flying snakes jump out, well, they like bloop out of trees and their body forms a frisbee shape, which is how they're able to go so far. Like frisbee awesome. Snakes, y'all. How do you not love them? So now I am not afraid of this flying snake. I would like to see a flying snake.
Yeah, from a safe distance. Are they venomous?
Not really. No, they are, but like they pose no problems to humans. They're totally okay. They're only venomous because, you know, they like to eat things that are made of meat. And humans are also made of meat, but too much of it. Like we have too much meat for the snake to eat. So they don't care about us.
So you, Marika, your listeners can't get the benefit of seeing Nora describe the flying snake, but there's lots of hand motions and descriptions and bodily movements. And so I'm saying all that because you get all that when you come to Animal Chat Time, you see the enthusiasm and the delivery that Nora has. And your listeners have, you know, perhaps missed the first four seasons, but it's on YouTube, so they can go back and catch the old episodes.
I am going to be showing my daughters some older episodes very soon. I know. I think later today we'll go through and figure out some for them to watch. I think
Perfect.
They'll love it.
Awesome. You can see the hand action that goes along with bloop.
And from the very first episode, we on the spot decided to associate a dance because, you know, kids have lots of energy, right? They have physical energy. They have to get out. And so, as Nora mentioned, the very first animal we did was the narwhal. Well, a narwhal looks like it has this big, you know, projection coming from its face. And so so at the very end of the first episode, we asked everyone to do the narwhal dance and we made it up on the spot. You extend one of your arms out. Rafe, I want to see you doing this. There you go. There you go. And now start rolling around your shoulder. Yep. Yep. You got to hold your shoulder like close to your face, like it's, you know, the tusk, the actual narwhal tusk. And then you start rotating it around. So from there, we couldn't stop. So every single animal has a dance that goes with it. And it's just perfect for the kids and for Nora and me.
And it's fun because it is, you know, so privacy is obviously really important. And so we record my face and we don't record any of the kids. All of the kids' voices, faces, everything is edited out before we put it on YouTube. But it is so fun because you can see me interacting with the kids and being like, oh yeah, that is a good tadpole dance. Well done. Or you hear that the kids are drawing and showing me their drawing or coloring or building or playing with plasticine. And so I think that's also so great for when kids are watching, they're also given, you know, permission to be creative and dance and move around. So it's not, you know, you just have to like sit and watch and it must be regimented. It is, you know, like you be creative and dance around and ask these questions and have the, you know, express the joy in any way that you want that we feel when we're learning about these animals.
Absolutely. That sounds like so much fun. So Let's start with Carol. If there was a book you could gift to all of the listeners, what would that book be?
Well, it would be a book that doesn't exist yet. Nora and I are going to be working on a series of 6 books about spiders. And I know, you're saying, why spiders of all creatures? Spiders are fascinating. They're very interesting and cool. And so in the next year or so, there will be some very factual kids books coming out about spiders that Nora and I will be working on. So that is what I would definitely gift to everyone in the world.
Nora?
Yes, I will also plug spiders because, as we talked about, not everything has to be cute at first glance to be cute. It can be cute the more we know about it and the more we find it interesting. And to segue into a book that I have read, Carol, I would say The Soul of an Octopus by Cy Montgomery.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful and so interesting. And, just learning about the biology of an octopus, learning about their creative minds, and even learning about the preference of food and people and activities that octopuses have. I think the more we learn about animals in this way, the more we realize that animals are us, sentient beings that like and dislike things. So we can have more empathy.
Yeah, that sounds like a great book. And now with that documentary that was out recently, the Octopus Teacher, that it might be something that people are really interested in reading more about.
Absolutely. Octopuses are amazing. There's also an Animal Chat Time about octopuses. But they are, they're truly amazing animals that the more, I think it's very much, the more you learn about octopus, the more you want to learn about fish and the ocean, and then that leads to conservation. So a good kind of gateway drug for people to start caring, or caring a little more.
Well, Nora, why don't you also talk about maybe an early childhood or formative memory you had of your connection with animals that kind of made you interested in animals?
Yeah, that is, it's so difficult because I truly have loved animals my whole life. I have a real problem. I was going to say in past tense, but I still do. If I have a stuffed animal that has a face, I can't not love it like a real thing. I have real Toy Story-itis with stuffed animals. Dolls, they're fine, but stuffed animals. So I grew up in West Germany. And when we came back to Canada, we moved to Calgary, Alberta, and we went into the mountains. And it was sort of the first time I saw kind of charismatic, mega Canada animals, because in our backyard in Germany, we had little lizards and birds and things like that. But I remember going up a gondola and seeing this huge mountain goat with my dad and just thinking what is this? This thing is the size of me. This thing, we were feeding them at that time. It was the 80s. Don't worry about it. But we were feeding it trail mix. And this huge animal was right here and took up the same space and the same earth as I did. And I just remember thinking that if this animal could exist in the same earth that lizards and birds and bears and everything else exists, what else might be out there? How weird and wonderful could animals be? And how cool that I get to me, little baby Nora, gets to look at this billy goat looking amazing.
I'll answer the question without answering the question. Marika, I too, like Nora, did not collect dolls. I was ew, blech. And I was surrounded by my stuffed animal friends. And like Nora, I still have stuffed animal friends. However, that might be a little weird to come over to my house and see stuffed animals all over the place. And so I've transferred that to a more adult appropriate way of having animals around. And if you look around at my house, there are different pieces of art that are like a ceramics or a painting or a mask that from Guatemala. There's just different manifestations of animals that are around me. I have a lovely friend who is a wildlife photographer, and her work is displayed. So I'm responding to your question, but I'm not really answering your question because Nora took my answer already.
You also had a formative memory of a billy goat?
No. The collection of animals. But I was out in the garden yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I'm very happy to report that my garden is attracting butterflies and hummingbirds and pollinators and goldfinches. And there's this like scrappy male cardinal that likes to hang around. But there was this little bitty, just strange insect. I love insects, even though they can be annoying at times. They do irritate us humans. They're just fascinating. And so even though it wasn't a childhood memory, I am sure that there were childhood moments that I also fixated on the little itty bitty, strange, bizarre world of invertebrates, insects. Earthworms are also very cool. So that is my response.
You were that little girl who carried earthworms around to show to your friends, weren't you?
I will not deny or confirm that.
So, Carol, what's the deal with animals?
The deal with animals is they're freaking cool, and we should continue to learn as much as we can about them. And they are so cool because they can do so many things that humans can't do. And I sort of bristle at this human tendency to think that we're superior and better and can do more things than animals. I bristle at that. So the deal with animals is that they can do so much more than humans can do, and that we should spend all of our waking moments trying to learn about them so that we can celebrate them properly.
Nice. Nora?
What's the deal with animals? They're so small. I'm sure no one's ever made a Jerry Seinfeld joke at that time. I'm the first.
You're the first. You're the first.
What are you talking about? Well, I am perplexed. The deal with animals is I am going to very much parrot what Carol said, that the deal with animals is we are animals and we can learn so much about being better animals by seeing them, by knowing that narwhals, some males have tusks, some females have tusks, some males have two, and no matter what, they don't kick each other out of their pods. They accept the whole range of the gender spectrum, knowing that there's some birds that migrate with each other and some birds that migrate by themselves. We can know that there's introverts and extroverts, and we can love people no matter what. The deal with animals is they can represent our truest, best selves. And when we strip away all of the ego and insecurity and stuff that goes along with being human, and we're just truly animals, we can be so much kinder and braver and nicer to each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. It would be nice if more people could see that from animals as well.
I think so.
And hopefully you guys, what you're doing, your project is helping people do that, I think.
As is your podcast. We're so happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you for joining me and putting together this first double guest episode, which has been a lot of fun. So thank you.
Yeah, this has been excellent. Thank you so much for having both of us.
That was Carol Klein, Managing Director and Founder of Fanimal. You can find out more about Fanimal at fanimal.online, fanimal.online, and Nora Livingston, CEO and Founder of Animal Experience International. You can find out more about Animal Experience International at animalexperienceinternational.com. Thank you again for joining me as we try to answer the question, what's the deal with animals? If you enjoyed this episode and have any questions or comments about it or the podcast in general, go to thedealwithanimals.com. Leave me a message. I will always read them. This is also a great place to go if you're interested in being a guest or have an idea for a series or episode. And don't forget to follow or review wherever you listen to your podcast, as it helps us become more visible to other listeners. Let's talk about shoutouts this week. We have a couple of new countries listening into the podcast, which brings us up to 51 countries. This is truly an international podcast, and I'm so proud and pleased that we have people from all over the world who are interested in the connection between humans and the more than human world. So big shout out to our first listeners in Bulgaria and the Czech Republic. Thank you all so much for listening in. I'm your host, Marika Bell. Theme music was composed by Kai Stranskoff, and episodes in this series were edited by Natasha Matzart. The Deal with Animals is part of the iRoar Animal Podcast Network. And since you listened all the way to the end of this episode, I'll give you a little surprise. Fanimal put out the Yeti Crab episode on October 21st, 2022, which coincided very nicely with the release of this episode the Monday right after. So if you get a chance, go to fanimal.online and learn all about Yeti crabs. So what do you think is the deal with animals?